Welcome back to Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry. And as always, my great co-host, Rob Hewler.
Hey, glad to be here.
And today's special guest is Joe.
Thank you for having me.
And we are listening to KRUU FM 100.1 in Fairfield, Iowa. What are we going to talk about today?
Well, Joe, what do you feel like talking about today?
Well, I guess one of the things that we discussed about reviewing today is the update on what some of the subcommittees are talking about.
For people who don't know, we are meeting. It's called the Fairfield Mental Health Alliance, which is an organization we started here in Fairfield, Iowa, to look at mental health issues across the board. So part of it is looking at things related to associated with the university, Maharishi University of Management. But part of it is really much, much greater than that. It's looking at mental health in a very diverse, small community. So this is a town of about 10,000 people, but there are people that are meditators. There are people that were meditators that are no longer meditators. There are people that will never meditate. There are people that are farmers who don't really know anything about what's going on in
the tater meters.
That's right. There's some of everything. We have a really diverse community financially.
And we have a lot of meditators who are not TM meditators, but are meditators.
Absolutely. Right. You know, we're getting past all the judgments and all the divisions, just like between people that have money and that don't have money, and getting down to what do we do to make this community, which is really representative of a lot of diverse communities, actually work. And one of the things we came up with is this Fairfield Mental Health Alliance. Suppose we could have a Chicago Mental Health Alliance, but we're in Fairfield right now. And in this Mental Health Alliance, we're looking at everything across the board of mental health issues. But part of that is really looking at the cultural stigmas against mental health issues and really getting to the fact that there should be no shame, no judgment, no guilt, no remorse. Getting to get people, if they want services, if they need services, to have those services available, know where they are and know what to do, and to have no longer fear about getting it. But it's also changing the mindset of the larger community. Rob, why don't you talk?
So in answer to that...
yeah.
Fairfield Mental Health organized meetings out on the campus at every other Tuesday, and they've been meeting for 4 or 5 months, haven't they? Maybe even more.
Yeah.
And it's been a great experience. And Ken Daly has done a processing of this and has done a wonderful job of taking all these diverse ideas and all these different people and getting them targeted into different groups. And one of those groups, which is titled...
I don't know the official title, but it's one to clarify some of the potential misunderstandings or misinterpretations of some of the Maharishi Vedic science teachings.
Well, explain what Maharishi Vedic science is.
I don't know that I'm qualified to do that.
Oh,
I was a
part of that subgroup.
I know.
So,
I'm not.
Well, I'll speak as a former MIU student. It was a long time ago, but basically, it's Maharishi's interpretations of the traditional Vedanta, and I guess tailoring it for Americans, for modern society, and I guess applying those teachings to daily life, to your lifestyle. To meditation techniques, to a variety of things.
Okay. So, by the way, that's Maharishi Mahesh Yogi for those who don't meditate, who aren't part of this community. And it's really looking at not just transcendental meditation as a technique, which I recommend to my clients to deal with anxiety or depression or even attention deficit disorder in terms of learning how to focus better, but utilizing the philosophy, and some of this is Indian philosophy, and adapting it in a modern structure and adapting it to psychology itself so that we could look at Eastern and Western approaches to psychology. And so that's part of that. And some you're talking about, your group looks at some of the misunderstandings of that.
Yeah, there's I guess some not examples out there of folks that have either used certain phrases in inappropriate situations. Maybe they've hyper-spiritualized certain situations, things like that, that I guess have ultimately affected people, caused harm in some way psychologically, because it didn't work out for them to receive that advice in that way.
Absolutely. So in Buddhist psychology, for instance, which is a very well-known field, they might talk about misunderstandings of attachment and non-attachment. And in our thing, one of the simple phrases, for instance, don't entertain negativity, which could be a wonderful thing in terms of not getting lost in negativity. But if you take that the wrong way, for example, it could mean, well, if I'm feeling negative, I shouldn't talk about it, or I shouldn't address it, or I should be in denial about what's going on.
Or never say anything that other people would interpret as being a negative, or, you know,
that's
arguing,
right,
or anything.
So yeah. I'm suppressing myself. Mm-hmm. So we're getting out of suppression and denial and going, no, that's not how things are intended.
And karma is another one, to say if someone's having a challenging time with something, oh, that's just their karma. I mean, so those types of statements or phraseology or whatever you call it, it's just not helpful for some people in some situations.
Absolutely.
So the process, Joe, is that somehow all, certain ideas have been brought to this group, and you're dealing with where they came from and what happened and what the real truth of them is. Is that?
Yeah. So what we're doing mainly is collecting case studies and putting those into categories, into buckets, and you know, some things are just
a case study means what?
Basically, an example of something that happened to someone in a certain situation. We are trying to keep things anonymous and general, because it's not important the actual, you know, who did what when. But the overarching theme and the things that have been going on here for literally for decades.
So if somebody has a case study, something happened to them, mm-hmm. because of the Transcendental Meditation movement or of something related to some misunderstandings or some difficulties or some stress, mm-hmm. that you guys are still open to taking more cases.
Yeah, we are.
So please email us, mentalhealthmatters@kruufm.com, and I will forward it to Joe to take a look at. That's mentalhealthmatters@kruufm.com.
Oh. One other question before we get really into it, and that is, who all is on the committee besides you?
Well, it's people come and go, okay. But some of the core group that I guess is representative of the movement is Brian Lee and Rob, is it Markowitz?
Yeah,
it's Bob Markowitz.
Right. Yeah, wonderful people.
Yeah, absolutely. Wonderful. Very receptive and, my opinion, enlightened,
their perspective. Anything down. By the way, that's really essential to say. No one is shutting anything down.
Yeah, that's
very
important.
There is nothing off the table, right, from the TM organization versus or people that are very much not part of this. Mm-hmm. Nobody is shutting any of the things down.
Yeah, okay. We have some very great perspectives from different time frames. People that have been here since the 70s, people that were involved in the movement in concentrated times in the 80s, students from MSE, myself a student from MIU back in the day. So we all have different perspectives that, again, some of the things that we're seeing are common themes that have been perpetuated, that have been happening for, like I said, for decades. And it's, you know, it feels like it's time that, you know, for change, basically. That's the bottom line.
And even certain people in the group, one of my wonderful therapists, Shira Bailey's there, and Joe's obviously there, Mary O'Shea, I mean, some lovely people.
Yeah, Andrew Perry, I think.
Andrew Perry, who's done a dramatic, powerful job, as always. Andrew always does. But
Valerie,
of course.
Doug Hamilton is also a great contributor.
But I think even with the personalities, and people have found difficulty with some of these personalities in the past, with certain people feeling that they've shut things down or things have been difficult in the past, were the notion of a new openness and really getting it so that we culturally can change is so powerful.
I think, you know, one of the first that was taken in consideration, and what's that?
And you are, by the way, listening to
KRUU FM radio in Fairfield, Iowa. Solar powered, broadcasting from downtown Fairfield. And this is Mental Health Matters with Dr. Scott Terry. And what I was saying is one of the first that was addressed by this committee was the whole conception that any kind of medication given to somebody for something was a bad thing for anybody that was in the TM movement.
Yeah, there's mixed, you know, sayings about that. I actually heard a lecture Maharishi in Chicago in 1973 was saying that, you know, if you have I forget the exact words, but basically if someone has an issue, the psychiatrist prescribes a medication, then the person becomes whole, and then they can transcend, and, you know, on and on and on. But then there's been plenty of times or examples where, whether it's an official statement from the movement or whether it's just a philosophy perpetuated in the culture, is that, yeah, traditional medicine is not good and we should be seeking alternatives. And that has, you know, probably is the core of many, you know, many of the suicides, many issues here.
Yeah, well, and then the movement stepped up and held that, whatever it was, October 5th or something meeting in which they announced that, you know, that this is exactly what we've been saying all along. This is what we advocate now, and if you've got a problem and you need to go to a doctor, go to the doctor and take the medicine. I can't remember who it was. Somebody was telling me, very close to Maharshi back in the 70s, they were some in Majorca or someplace, and he got sick, and they, you know, and Maharishi put him on the airplane and said, go to New York and go to the Presbyterian Hospital and get well and then come back. And, you know, so that, you know, and all of that has been addressed, and I think addressed very, very well by the movement.
And I think part of the general statement, for instance, about medication is really a great example. It's really one about balance. It's not that Western medicine has all the answers or Eastern medicine or, you know, it's really about having a better balance. So I talk about in clinical practice, for instance, people taking medicine. Well, mild depression, for instance, is a very different animal than major depression. And having mild depression, I could get a huge neurochemistry shift if I could get somebody to change their lifestyle. Exercise, meditation, diet, nutrition, sleep, connecting to themselves, having a purpose, volunteering, connecting to others. And really, I could get a huge, much more, in fact, dramatic neurochemistry shift than I can by popping a pill. Mm-hmm. But again, if you've got major depression, you've got a whole different set of
bipolar schizophrenia you need.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And so it's really, again, about not being afraid of what's going on, but coming up with a balanced perspective. And it's the same kind of thing of bringing this to the TM organization about having a balanced perspective of how we're addressing everything here.
Mm-hmm. So you know, the movement has really stepped up, I think, on that issue. And what are some of the other issues that that the committee is considering?
That's the major thing. I mean, there's all these other subcommittees. Like one of them that you alluded to very early on, Scott, is the collecting of local resources. So that's another committee where we are going through and identifying, and we're going to publish in a book and publish on websites, you know, because one of the things is that it's really not convenient. If you're coming here from out of town and you need traditional medicine, it's not really easy and convenient for you to find. I recently learned, I went down to the hospital, I got the list of all the doctors in town. Apparently, most of the doctors in town are now part of two groups associated with the hospital. That's why you don't see a doctor having an independent office on the square. You see a lot of chiropractors, but they don't manage medicines in the practices.
Not only are there two groups, but those two groups are owned by the hospital also.
Yeah, so it's really... Right. But, I mean, that's something I only recently learned. So it's making this information more convenient and accessible.
I've served on that committee for a while, and one of the enlightening things to me was was also finding out what is available, but what wasn't available that should be available.
That's like more psychiatrists.
Really, yeah, right. We have one psychiatrist in Jefferson County, and he's overloaded, difficult to... you know, get an appointment with, and we need another psychiatrist, and you know, there's a program going on in the legislature to help get doctors to move into rural areas, but there's no program for psychiatrists. And so, you know, that's another issue that we need to be addressing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of issues, and the committees, and we do invite, again, everybody to come down to these meetings. Everybody's listening.
No.
Oh. And, you know, we really do want everybody to come down to these meetings, but and to join a group that you find interested in. But tell us more about this one specific committee where they're looking at some of these cultural dimensions and how they're doing that. They're taking some of these stories that have happened, mm-hmm. right? And some of these are very disturbing stories of things people have been very much troubled and bad things have happened to people, right?
Yeah, that's. I mean, there's a huge dichotomy. Some people walk away unscathed, and some people, I think, when especially if somebody brings more to the table when they come here, they might be making a lot of sacrifices. They might be finally finding something that they've been searching for a long time.
In a small town that's has great advantages, but
to have a Vedic university in America, I mean, if you. I mean, that's kind of my story, is that I was studying yoga on my own, and when I finally found that this place existed, I was very excited to learn that. And it's something that should be here, you know, in America, I think, to have Vedantic teachings. I mean, I think it's great. That's just an example. The more you bring to the table, emotionally or mentally, the more hurtful it is when something bad happens, when something goes wrong, when somebody says something to you, or, I mean, if you're kicked out of the movement. I mean, this is... You know,
and that doesn't denigrate. For instance, Maharishi University of Management is a wonderful place, and it really has that balanced perspective they're really striving for, of both having some Vedic perspectives, some Eastern perspectives, but very much grounded in very traditional, call it Western perspectives. Their literature department is very much about literature. It has nothing to do with anything else. And it's like having that balanced perspectives. But I think coming to an ideal community, and that even phrase itself could be problematic.
You know, the perfectionism.
Exactly. Well, we're going to talk about perfectionism in a second. And having that notion is also a difficult kind of thing. But what's really fascinating about it is how... We're able to be honest about it all. That doesn't mean we're in denial about anything. We're not glorifying the negative. We're saying there's been difficulties, but we're creating something so much more powerful now, and we want everyone to be part of that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you mentioned one that I've heard. You know, I'm new to the movement. I'm new to Fairfield. Well, I'm not new to Fairfield, but... I've only lived here 6 years.
Is it the Parsons graduate?
Yeah, right. I'm a Parsons graduate. I was here before most of you were. But anyway,
most of us are alive. But that's another thing.
But the idea that you move here and to join an ideal community, which just sets yourself up for, at least sets me up for failure, because I have a hard time being ideal on anything, or that other word that we were talking about before we went on air was perfectionism.
Mm.
And let's talk about that for a
yeah, there's a great article in Salon.com some time ago. It's have in front of me the Dark Side of Perfectionism is the title. It's from October of this year. And let me just quote. They refer to a journal from the American Psychological Association. And basically, they summarize, severe perfectionism can lead to crippling anxiety, depression, and can amplify the risk of suicide. So one of the damning parts of traditional and Maharishi Vedic teaching is that the language, the jargon that's used, has a lot of these, really, the strong phraseology, like sitting in full lotus position, that's called siddhasana, that word means perfect pose. You know, these words are just part of... the language, the jargon, and so it doesn't help.
no, it's a cultural.
Yeah, exactly.
We haven't made the. It appears to me that haven't made the cultural change in words the way we ought to. I mean, away from the Indian way of looking at it, as opposed to the Western way of looking at it in many cases.
Yeah, and I think this way to approach it is it to say that, you know, this is how you deliver it and how you execute it, and whether or not you reinforce it or punish around it, around the teachings, around the language. That's, I think, really what matters more is that you can use these words, but kind of deflate their meaning a little bit and just say that, you know, rather than say this is the way, you can say it is said that, you know, or, you know, just some sort of
this
way.
This is one possibility. By the way, you are listening to Mental Health Matters, KRUU-FM 100.1, the greatest radio station on the planet. If you didn't know that, by the way. Yeah, absolutely.
And I saw the sign outside.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, one of the things I deal with in terms of perfectionism with individuals is talking about perfectionism as a quality of giftedness. It's a characteristic of giftedness. And we have to think about these characteristics as being like an energy. It could be good or bad depending on what you do with it. It's like being gifted itself. Everybody would normally think it's a wonderful thing, except if you can't channel that giftedness, if you can't use your mind for what it's intended.
It could isolate you. It could, you
absolutely know. And you start turning it towards yourself and thinking about your thinking about thinking about your thinking about, right? And you start going to driving
just
yourself
implode into entropy.
That's right. And it's, I talk about exercise as being a wonderful thing, but if you have an eating disorder, it could be a terrible thing. Well, perfectionism could be a wonderful thing. It could be a way to focus you and get work done and be focused in a way where you could channel your energy in a directed, forceful manner. But again, if you don't know how to utilize it, it could become obsessive and destructive.
Yeah, and so, with so many philosophical and, you know, spiritual teachings, it's the path, not the destination. So to be perfect, you know, it's more the process of striving towards those ideals.
Exactly. And so when we talk about that notion of perfectionism towards this languaging or towards what we're trying to create here, again, it needs to be put in that light. Mm-hmm. It's just a path. What are we doing on our paths? And what are all of us every single day, this minute, what are you doing as you're listening to this on your path? What are you creating for yourself today? And you cannot be ideal. You cannot be perfect. You can move in that direction to create what you need to do for you.
Yeah, I think of recycling as a good example of myself. It's like I haven't recycled every bit of paper and aluminum and glass in my life, but by doing what I can do when I'm available to do it, when it's available to be recycled, I'm doing more than most. So I'm doing a little bit. I'm doing a lot when it's convenient, and it's rather than stressing out on every little thing, it's doing just a little is doing more than most, and you're doing it in the right direction.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, you know, without, and I've been struggling on how to say this without naming the title of the book, but I just read a book on consciousness, God consciousness, and other kinds of consciousness, and it's a very well-written book and very well-documented and an exciting book in some ways, but I felt like a complete failure when I got done reading the book because I have not, you know, in my meditative life, have not obtained the levels that this book points out as being the almost normal way in which enlightenment takes place. Yeah. And it was a, you know, and I paid $37 for the book, too. And,
get your money back.
Right. So, you know, it could be, you know, as I look back at the at what I read, is that it could be a progression of kind of a way in which I am improving, or I am improving my life, or a progression of my life, as opposed to what I should do, which is what I got out of the book.
Yeah, and that's part of the traditional teachings in my recent Vedic science as well, is the self-referral system, is looking back where you're at, your stage right now. I think
today,
of it with yoga.
This moment, this very moment.
Yeah, right. I think of yoga postures in the same way. I used to teach asanas at a Ashtanga yoga class, and everyone's got their own current level of their range of motion with their joints at that given time. And that's what you have to work with, you know, and you work towards progressing. There's no goal to get the full posture. There's always a little more distance you can bend your joint, you know. It's not the goal to, you know, be a pretzel.
We all have limitations, every one of us. We have limitations on age or intelligence or health.
No, let's not talk about age.
Well, hey. So we all have limitations. The problem is that we end up focusing on our limitations and not on what we're creating from those limitations.
Exactly. I agree. That's mm-hmm. a good way to put it.
Amen.
And so, you know, perfectionism is not the path. Perfectionism is something we're moving towards. And it's not a perfectionism of others. It's a perfectionism. It's something more that we'd like to create for ourselves. And so when we think about these committees and looking at people, stuff that's happened to people, some of that is because they got lost in thinking that a group or an organization or the TM organization,
well, these things outside of themselves,
yeah, was going to give them the answers, and it didn't fulfill what they had some expectation of, as opposed to what did they create from that today. Mm-hmm. If it's not giving you what you want, create something else. Nobody has a gun to your head. Create what you need to create so your life works. Yeah. So your life today is powerful. And if it works with you, great. And if it doesn't, either change the group that you're in to be something more, come join us, for example, or create something else in your life. But the power isn't outside of you, over and over and over again. And so when we start talking about these case studies, for example, it's really about looking at how you can create that for yourselves. And what, and as a group, what can we learn from these case studies so the organization can be on a better path?
Right. That's part of the...
As opposed to they're bad, they're good, they're... No. Everything's evolving, including organizations.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. It's one of the... most recent meetings we talked about it's a dynamic of organizations, of groups, and it's something that just simply with most groups they self-correct, and this is what we're going through now. And so actually in part of the categorization process, we have a column now for a solution system.
That, right.
So we identified in different categories, you know, a common theme like just to say misinterpretation or misunderstandings of the teachings. So we'll have an example in the category of the university, and a category for the community, and then a category for a solution system to those addressing it.
And something we haven't talked about, we're running out of time here, is that once these case studies are handled in whatever way, how is it that the information is going to get out about how the real, the true teaching is, or what the result of the case study? How are you going to get that information out to the public?
That is a great question. I don't know that there is an answer. There might be one by somebody. I have suggested that there be an open letter to the community, mm-hmm. A series of newsletters, a blog, a website, this types of things to get that out there, because that's part of the problem, is that there have been corrective action, we're learning recently, by the organization, by the movement, but that has not gotten out. And the people that have been harmed by it, you know, even as early as 5 or 10 years ago, they don't know that it's been addressed and that's been corrected.
Right. And so they're still fighting old battles that have already...
Right, there's old, you know, scar tissue out there.
Yeah, that's always the difficulty in any kind of a organization that tries to resolve something, is that once they resolve it, how do they let people know that it's resolved and what was the resolution of it? Yeah. By the I know this is somewhat a deviation, but from perfectionism, I need to go back to that just for a second, because... you know, one of my favorite jokes, and I don't tell many jokes on here, but one of my favorite jokes is that I'm bald. That's not the joke. That's a reality. I'm bald, and my statement is God created a few perfect men, and the rest of them covered with hair. But anyway, going back, you know, the movement did handle. Yeah, we're at 26. So the movement did handle the. We're more than that. Okay, this is Mental Health Matters, and with Dr. Scott Terry, and we are broadcasting from Fairfield, Iowa, in KRUU-FM 100.1.
Joe, is there anything you'd like to say to finish on up today?
No, I just appreciate you guys having me out here, and it's an honor to be here. I heard you guys being interviewed a long time ago in preparation for the first inaugural meeting at the library, and it's great to be here.
Yes.
Well, we've got to have you back, because there's a lot of other things that I know you're involved in that we need to be talking about.
Sure.
Well, thank you so much for both of you guys for being here today. And this is another great show for everybody. And have a powerful day right now.
And by the way, it is on Tuesdays at 6:30 and Thursdays at 12:30. You can listen to Mental Health Matters on KRUU.
Bye.